En Cox estamos un paso adelante, como el muchacho que ya sabe la orden de tu cafecito incluso antes de pedirlo.
Hey, José, café con leche sin lactosa, un toque de vainilla templadito sin azúcar.
En Cox también nos adelantamos a lo que necesitas. Por eso el precio de tu plan no subirá por 3 años. Y nuestra seguridad avanzada protegerá tu red de amenazas antes de que pasen. Cox, un paso adelante. José, llamada de tu jefe en 3, 2, 1. Al menos 500 megabits por segundo de velocidad y Cox Unlimited Mobile. Impuestos y cargos no incluidos en garantía de precio. Velocidad de datos móviles reducida tras usar 20 gigas al mes.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Ted, good afternoon. How are you?
Fantastic, David. How are you?
I'm good, man. How has your week been so far?
So far, it's been great. Just got back from Miami, like, Sunday. So it's always good to leave and come back, you know?
I hear that. Work, holiday?
Excuse me?
Was it a work trip, a vacation?
It was more leisure. So Miami's always a good place to go and move and shake, because there's always a lot of people who are interested in, one, entertainment, but also they're usually financially stable enough to, like, make investments and stuff.
I see.
So it's just a good place to be, because it's just a playground for, like, entertainment and, you know, investor type people.
I hear that. Okay. Yeah, well, I met you back in May at an event. I believe it was Mental Health Awareness Month in music. I think it was.
Right. You were visiting LA from London, right? Yeah. That was great times.
Really good time. And so since then, I've discovered that you are a connector. You are many ways influencer. You handle many brand deals. So for those who are listening, who are going to be familiar with you, who are you?
So I am an... What am I? I'm a creator, creative, connector. I like that word to describe me. But, you know, I think I'm a people person. I like being around dope people doing dope things. So I think that naturally, if you're in these environments, you're gonna see some, like, natural connections. And I think that I'm able to see that at a very good rate. So when I do, I just kind of make the connections that I see fit, right? Or ideate on what potential could be there. And I think that's where I really kind of like to play around, is the ideation of things. I'm definitely a vision-oriented person. So I think that, long and short, I'm just a vision-oriented connector.
Right. And when you mentioned these deals, to my understanding, it's you connecting brands, organizations, investors with entertainers. Is that correct?
Not necessarily. It's actually interesting you say that, because I've been getting a rap these days for being someone who could connect people with investors, and that's not true. Right. I literally have access to high net worth people, and not for anything other reason except for the places that I've been. So I'm born and raised in Miami. I've lived in Dubai for 5 years while traveling Europe, and now I live in LA. And I think when we think about the financial capitals of the world, where things, especially in entertainment space, I think we're talking about, like, 3 geographic areas where there are a lot of those type of people. So I have access to people. I mean, 1 in 5 people in LA are apparently millionaires, you know? And I think if you, like, look at the South Beach, Brickell, even, like, downtown area in Miami, you'll find that the ratio is probably very similar. So I think when you're, like, a vision-oriented ideator and connector, you naturally, like, fall into circles where those people are at. So I know them, but I'm not someone who connects people with investors. I think that when people are looking for investments, they have to look for people who synergize with exactly what they're doing. It's not, finding an investor is not something I think you pursue as a to-do list. I think there's a lifestyle and, like, building a business or building things. And it just so happens that people who have the capital to invest show up.
I see. Okay. So what exactly would you say your job title is, or job role is?
So at the moment, I categorize myself as a strategy consultant, because that's how the bills get paid, right? People pay me for services. And it's usually in the spectrum of idea to launch. I usually can't do all of it at once, right? So I'm not going to take an idea and then like turn it into like a multi-million dollar business. What I normally do is I help either in the beginning stages or the ending stages, right? And I think if you look at like Pareto's principle, like you could break things down in the 80-20 rule, right? And like not very many people are able to do 100% of it. When you think about those people, they're outliers, like the Steve Jobs and Michael Jordans that like, you're like, oh shit, from end to end, they could do it, you know? I'm a good starter or I'm a good finisher. I don't do both well. Okay. So I like the idea of like ideating, you know, a project, but I'm also very good. And actually where I really say I grinded my teeth and became, you know, what I categorize as successful in this sort of space is, you know, when I moved to Dubai, I was helping a semiconductor distribution company for everything from strategy, marketing, etc. But where I really excelled was on the strategy part. So I ended up helping them build the ERP system, which is like a enhanced CRM for people who don't know what ERP system. It's an enterprise resource planning system. And big enterprise or big companies use this for like logistics, sales, etc. Because if you're selling a product, you also want to know what your inventory levels are, you know, if the warehouse could distribute it, etc. But I helped build an ERP system that helped them go from $50 million a year to $1 billion a year in like 5 years. So obviously there was like things that controlled this, right? It's not like I built a system and they went to a billion. That would be great, but that's not what happened. What actually happened was through the pandemic, they got such a surge in business. There was like, you guys probably remember that there was like, everything was backed up. Cars were limited. A lot of electronic items, like there was a holdup, and that's because there was a holdup in supply chain. When that happens, there's a shortage and the commodity prices go up. Now, if you don't have a great system to be able to capitalize on this, you're only going to be able to go as fast as you can make a phone call or you understand what's the supply and demand levels. So when after building this ERP system, the company I worked with, they were able to like really just like swim through the pandemic demands. I don't know if that's a good analogy, but they're able to like understand the market a lot easier than they would if they didn't have the ERP system, if they just had a simple CRM. So they have offices around the world, and like a salesperson in Europe can tell a salesperson in US when time zones are different that someone is asking for a semiconductor in Europe and therefore there might be a shortage in the market. Right. So they know that if someone asks for it in the morning, then in the US, then they could raise the prices because there's demand out there.
Interesting. Okay. I see. Okay. So in that instance, then you are helping businesses become more efficient in that sense, right?
Right.
Okay. And how would you compare that space into entertainment? Do you prefer one or the other?
It's actually interesting because, well, so I prefer, I think from a lifestyle perspective, the entertainment industry is always going to be super dope. From an economic perspective, one is easier to count, right? One is very like analytical and just like, you know, you can't tell who's going to be the next star or hit maker, but you can tell which semiconductors are probably going to be in demand, you know?
Right.
So, so one is, you know, obviously a little bit more financially stable and rewarding, but one is actually just more fun. And I think what you find is that a lot of people make their money in boring industries and then they end up like trying to buy into the fun ones.
I hear that. Okay. So you mentioned you were raised in Miami and then you moved to Dubai and then you moved then to California.
Exactly.
Okay. And how would you compare the three places? As far as... As far as lifestyle and business, how would you compare the three?
Yeah. So I think that they're all three actually are like very similar. I mean, the weather for sure is like similar in all the locations. And I think they attract like kind of similar people, right? I think that, you know, California less so, but a lot of people in Miami, Dubai, and LA are transient and they're also like, I think, seeking something. And I think that's like what I find fascinating and what I like, because I think I'm always like searching as well. But you don't just arrive in Dubai by mistake and settle down, right? Like you have to make an intention to like be someplace new, cool, different, you know? And I think you're surrounded by those types of people as well. And I think you could say the same for like Miami and LA, right? Like if you look at like a lot of the cities, like, you know, if you're in downtown or maybe even Beverly Hills, but just a lot of places in LA, people are like very intentional. They're like, I came here because it's Hollywood and I'm trying to make something, like do something, you know, different. And quite frankly, if you're in LA and you're not trying to be in the industry and be, you know, then you might have chosen the wrong place because you're choosing a very expensive city for no reason. And I think you could say kind of the same for like Dubai and Miami, right? They're very, you know, purposeful and intentional about what they're looking for.
Yeah, LA is very expensive.
Well, I think expensive is relative, but
yeah. Sorry, I think compared to London, believe it or not.
Really, it's I think that LA, like I can't comment on like price points, because I to each person, depending on what they do, it might be different. But like LA for sure, if you're moving and shaking the right ways, like. The opportunities.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner, so you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work, with over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you, and most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
All here. Wow. So like if I had to pay like LA prices in Montana where I know like I can't just bump into like Tim Cook at Soho House or something, you feel me? Like I might not want to do that, right? But like in LA, your whole life can change just with one conversation at the right place at the right time, you know?
I think that's it. You're right. Yeah. That's true. I found that yes, you pay a lot to be there. I'm saying as a tourist, right? However, you go to one event, you meet one person, and it, like I always say this, when I go to California, I have nothing planned at all, right? I'm just present. I go out, you meet one person, it's like, even yourself, bro, how we met? Same thing.
Yep.
We're at the Soho House event, and then from there, different events. So I think you mentioned at one point that you were helping Erica Menor do something, right? How typical is that of your experience in music as far as helping different entertainers, influencers create different things?
Right. So like, I think a lot of it is in like starts off in like the ideation stage. So like Erica is like a great example. I met her through my business partner. So I wasn't necessarily helping her with anything. We were ideating to see if there was a fit for us to do something together. Mm. It turned out that there wasn't. But these are like, it's not uncommon for these things to like kind of go in circles. So like I met her like 2 years ago and there was some like opportunities she was thinking through. But then things happened. We got disconnected. And then I saw her again when I went to Miami and we started talking again. And yet again, it didn't seem to be a fit. I'm not sure if there is going to be one. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think that like over the course of doing this brand, like, you know, whether it's like brand building or like venture building, or even just connecting people, I think you kind of like find like you kind of create a buyer persona of like who you like are the ideal people that you want to work with, right. And who like it's you probably bump into those types of people all the time, but doesn't mean that they're the right fit for your business. So I'm still in the process of like really honing in on that because I meet cool people all the time. And, you know, I got like shiny object syndrome. So like I'm always like, oh, yeah, there's potential there. But it's like, you know, can't do everything.
I hear that. I mean, one of the things I've noticed is that several entertainers are now creating consumer brands, right? And
right.
So you're seeing people who, you know, don't need the money, quite frankly, right? Who are taking these risks in business. Why is that? Is there something happening behind the scenes which is inspiring people to kind of get into, let's say, food, for example, or alcohol, perfume?
Yeah. Well, I don't think that, I don't know if that's, I agree with you on that. I think they do need the money. Frankly, I think everyone needs some money. Like we're not living in economic times or socioeconomic times now where people are just like so fluid. I mean, like maybe you could say Bill Gates doesn't need the money, you know, or like the top, like, you know, maybe like the top 2,000 billionaires don't need the money. But I think the wrong lifestyle with bad financial planning will like mess anyone up, you know. I'm sure there's a lot of people that no one thought they would, you know, need the money, you know, but then you're like, oh shoot, that guy was a billionaire and now he's not, you know? So yeah.
Interesting. And how easy is it? So are these guys white labeling? How's it work usually? Are they
Pardon?
How does it work usually? So, for example, let's say an entertainer says, I want to make coffee, right? Are they going, as far as you know, are they going to, let's say, white labels, for example, or how are they doing it?
Yeah, I mean, there's so many, not so many, there's like a handful of ways that you can do this, right? Like, and it depends on how close to the source you are and which parts you want to take advantage of, right? So, with any brand or business, like, there's obviously the manufacturer. And, like, I'm not going to, like, say manufacturer of like a service or product. Let's just across the board say, like, there's someone that's actually doing the work, right? At the ground level. And that person is like, the as close as you could get to that is like how much money you could possibly make, right? So the difference between like being an entrepreneur and having a brand deal is obviously as a brand deal, all they're doing is using your name and likeness and paying you accordingly. But if you own the company, you obviously take so much more of like the revenue, right? I guess here's an example. Like The Weeknd has a deal with like Blue Bottle, where it's like a brand partnership. So he has his own line of coffee. That's a very different type of deal than like let's say Rihanna with Fenty Beauty, right? And I think that like you know the economics of the deal because one is on Forbes and the other is not, you know? I mean, I would assume the economics of the deal
Okay, so
because
how
of
do those two deals differ between The Weeknd's coffee brand and Rihanna's 20?
Like Rihanna owns Fenty, right? She owns 50% based off what I know, she owns 50%, and or better, based on what I researched, she owns 50%, and LVMH owns the other 50%. So that's how she like got to be a billion-dollar company because of the stake that LVMH has in it. Whereas with The Weeknd and Blue Bottle, that's more of I don't know the intricacies of that deal, but like I know that he doesn't own Blue Bottle, right? So that's like that's different, right? Like so one made her a billionaire, the other is like, oh, it's a brand partnership that's private that no one knows about.
That's interesting. Okay, and so on your end, for example, so I understand that you're not a so as a connector, for example, right? Someone could say, listen, so I know Ted, he's a great guy, he's a great connector. If a musician decided they wanted to build something outside of music and they came to you, what would the first step look like?
Yeah, so I think like ideating with them and determining whether or not they're the right fit for entrepreneurship or like a brand deal. And like I stay away from brand deals. It's actually not what I do because like just because we just talked about the economics of like one versus the other, like if I have a percentage of like Fenty Beauty, that's way better than like just brokering a deal with like an artist and like a coffee brand, right? So one is like residual like revenue, and the other is this one-time partnership that you're like essentially creating. So when someone comes to me, or if I like, and it's it doesn't really happen that way, or at least it hasn't happened that way to me. Like no one's like calling me and like I mean, well, I guess some people have, but usually I kind of try to like figure out what. All right, I guess like part I started off saying that I do strategy consulting. So if someone comes to me, typically. The first thing like I identify is whether or not I'm taking a percentage of or if they're just hiring me as a consultant, right? And just paying me a retainer. So if someone comes to me, first they have to decide like if they want a partnership with me or if they're just hiring me to do something, you know? So that's the first step. Now, if it's a percentage of, then I qualify the person to determine whether or not they're a good fit. And I'm my metrics for that or like my qualifications for that are like shifting because I've been in like some terrible situations and I'm trying to work out. Excuse me.
Awesome.
Like getting into deals with people that like would I be an ideal fit, but then like they're not entrepreneurs, so like their day-to-day habits don't align with what it would take to like build a successful brand. So like because of ambition or like shiny object syndrome, you're like you really want it to work, so you like make an effort, but then you're like this person is clearly not like built for this, you know? So yeah, so those are like the bad situations, and like there's good situations where people are like super active and interested. First of all, the best situation if they just pay you, I mean, our good situation is if they just pay you up front, then it's like whether they do or don't, like you still got paid. But yeah, another like situation is if you if you're doing a partnership and that you have a percentage of, but they either act like an entrepreneur or they don't act like an entrepreneur. Those are two options, and you really want them to like be entrepreneur. You want entrepreneurial. You want them to be like a true partner. but that's something that you kind of like, you won't know until you like take the ride with them, right?
Interesting. So are there any things that you're working on currently that you can share?
I'm definitely working on a couple brands. Well, I'm working on a I'm still in the process of working on a beauty brand with a celebrity artist. Nice. And we're actually in the contractual stage now. So we basically started off with like finding a good fit for the artist. So right. We found something that resonates with this brand that if he launched, people wouldn't be like, oh, that doesn't connect, you know? Okay. So that was the first part. We've actually even qualified him. So we know that like he's super interested and ambitious and he's goal oriented on building and launching something. Now where we got stuck, which we could have probably like done this first, but we don't want to put the cart before the horse. That's usually a challenge. Is now we're in the contractual stage. It's like, hey, so we want a certain percentage of the deal to...
Planet Fitness has everything you need to get stronger just around the corner. So you can give everything you've got. Whether you want to crush a few reps before class with our expanded strength equipment or sweat it out on your way home from work. With over 2,800 locations, there's a Planet Fitness close to you. And most are open 24 hours. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 30th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Put in the sweat equity and then we're going to go out and raise funding and then launch the brand. So we're doing that. And a new thing that's out is equity crowdfunding. So we're utilizing equity crowdfunding is essentially like back when in the U.S. when Obama was president, he passed a law, or I might not be saying it correctly, that allows people to do like almost like crowdfunding, but equity crowdfunding, where basically they create an SPV so that like the average person can invest in without being an accredited investor, invest in startup brands. And it's basically you can invest as little as like 50 bucks, you know, and typically the funding round is like $500,000 to 750 or something like that. But there's some great examples of people building and launching their brands using equity crowdfunding. So that's a really good way, especially when you're working with like a celebrity artist or like anyone with like with an online presence and a following, because you can just leverage their following to kind of like, you know, it's super impactful because you can say, hey, if someone really cares about your brand, they're literally investing the same amount that they would be purchasing your item for, you know? So that's really cool to be able to see, because those are the same people who are going to buy your brand once it's launched. So that's one project. And then I'm working on my own startup, which is like a music tech platform that I'm pretty ambitious about.
Sweet. Okay. I've heard a bit about that. Can you share more about its premise, how it's going to work?
Yeah, it's really an ideation stage. But I think like going back to one of your questions about, you know, people starting brands, like artists starting brands and, you know, creators, influencers, celebrities starting brands. And, you know, if they don't need the money, why are they doing it? Like, I think that that's been like, at least in hip hop, like it's very aspirational, the music. So like no one in hip hop is like, yo, we're going broke. You know, I mean, maybe they're starting to say that now, but like, that's not like really what people lead with, because they want to seem like, oh yeah, I got the Rolls Royces and the big house and the big cars and partying all the time, you know, but that's far from the truth. Like the music industry is broken. And like not a lot of people even see light at the end of the tunnel, right? Because streams are up, revenues are down. Yeah. We're seeing like, we saw like there was a writer's strike in LA or like, for the union, and like writers we're saying, hey, you got all these shows on Netflix and Hulu and we're not getting paid what we should be getting paid. So the music industry probably is like going to be doing something very similar. You're seeing layoffs at Atlantic. You're seeing, just people aren't making the money that they used to make. So Own Masters is how do we transition from like the wanting a record deal to just like being independent, treating your music as a business, right? And I think that like a lot of artists have been able to do, I can't name them, but they've been able to do this successfully, where they like own all their stuff, their IP, and like they just go from like, you know, a viral video on TikTok or like Instagram, and then, you know, transitioning that to like touring, merch, among other things. Yeah, so I think that the future of music is probably like music itself being a loss leader, and artists actually using their music as a gateway to being able to like start a business or get into businesses.
It's interesting. A few things that are really interesting. So you mentioned equity funding, right?
Yeah,
Equity private, right?
crowd equity funding, yeah.
Equity funding. All right. So in that case, for example, a fan of an artist could invest in, let's just say, J. Cole said he's going to release, let's say, a line of trainers, for example, right?
Right.
A J. Cole fan could invest in the company.
Right.
Interesting. And so how does that work exactly? Is there a process? Are there any checks that someone has to go through? Is there a platform that one? How does it
Yeah,
work?
there's you can go on WeFunder or Start Engine.
Yeah.
Those are two that I know of off the top of my head. And basically, you sign up and you create a profile. I know Start Engine, you have to apply. I think WeFunder has like some sort of qualification process, but basically, what you're doing is like filling out a Schedule C form with the SEC, and then basically the platform makes it like just the UI like more beautiful that or like more attractive, like right? Because like if I say like if you want to invest in a company with me, like I would essentially say like okay, cool, like here's a term sheet and like wire the money here. But if you go to the average person, you tell them to wire money and here's a term sheet, just that process is like pretty complex, right? Where they'll be like, oh, this is overwhelming, or like depending, especially if they're not
It's
like
11
accredited
o'clock.
investors. So if they're accredited investors, like they're used to this and they're like, oh shoot, like where do I wire?
I
But if
see.
they're like not accredited investors, if they're like angel investors for instance, like usually this whole process is new to them and they're not like doing deals every week. They're doing deals because they know, like, and trust you.
I see. That's interesting. All right. And so you also mentioned you're currently working on a beauty brand for male artists.
Pardon?
I think you mentioned that you're working on a beauty brand for a male artist. Was that correct? Interesting. And so when you hear the word beauty, you normally think of female artists, right? So without saying too much about the artist, what kind of products could, let's say, a male musician sell in the beauty space?
Well, I think like I'm not sure if like the word, well, I'm sure that the word beauty isn't feminine. I think it's a unisex word. But the beauty space, like if you go to the beauty aisle in like Target, you'll see that there's a series of items like from hair care to beard care to face washes, to like body products, fragrances. Those are all categorized under beauty.
Right, I see. Okay, and so then how do you market to men if, for example, like the average guy may say, oh, I don't want to buy into a beauty brand. You know what I'm saying? So is there a way you market to men where obviously it is beauty, right? But what I'm asking is, do male artists or male entrepreneurs have to market beauty in a different way than female artists?
No, I think that you, first of all, I wouldn't start off with calling it beauty, right? Like I'm beauty is the industry, but the categories within the industry, I'd get really specific on the marketing and communication part of it.
Yeah.
So yeah, I would call it specifically what it is. So if it was hair care, I'd be like, oh, this male artist is launching this hair care brand. If it's beard care, he's launching this beard care line. If it's like,
Skin care.
exactly.
It's interesting. Okay. Now, you mentioned the industry changing, and it's about we're seeing it now, unfortunately, where there are major layoffs. Why do you think that is? I mean, so why do you think we're in a space now where the artists who have these, which should be good recording contracts, aren't able to generate the kind of income that they should be considering how well known they are, how much investment they've received? Why is that, do you think?
Yeah, so I did a panel called The Future of Music with a few people, but Danny Boy Styles was a producer, made a lot of like hit records. He talked about kind of the industry, and the best I understand it is that like a deal was made, right, with these like DSPs that aren't really attractive for the artists. And frankly, if I'm honest, I don't know if they were like if it's not attractive, I think that they just feel like people feel like they got the wrong deal, like it's like if you're on Upwork and you're hiring people, right, and like you're like building like a six-figure business on Upwork, you're like, oh, this is great. But all of a sudden, if Upwork is like, hey, by the way, we're going to go from 10% to 20% commission
Right.
on your transactions, like you may be like, oh, Upwork, like you trying to take all my money. But like, would you have made the six figures without Upwork? So now I think the music industry is like very similar. Like, you know, people, it's like, and another example I'll use is like paparazzi, right? Like, you know, in the beginning, like the Kardashians would pay paparazzi or call paparazzi and tell them where they're going to be at so they could get shots. You know what I'm saying? Now they're hiding from the paparazzi. So I think that this is like a this is like the tug of war between like, you know, your beginning stages and where you end up, when you end up where you end up, you know? And I think that that hasn't been like properly navigated. So like, for one, you want these DSPs, and even if they're like taking a lot of your revenue, you're like, well, they're the ones making me like famous to begin with, you know? So I think the responsibility is on the artist to not want to take, like, if an artist wants to take a dollar from me every time I listen to a song, to me that's ridiculous. You know, because I'm like, yo, I would have listened to your song 100 times. So you think I should give you $100? That's, you know. I think that that direction is like incorrect. Like, obviously, like as a tech company, Spotify has like, you know, just and the intellectual property, right, to like actually create the platform. Like, I think they have like a huge like overhead that they have to like figure out, and we don't know where the direction of the music industry is going. So like, I think like they're taking a risk by actually doing all this stuff. But yeah, I think the industry is just like in this like confusing space right now that we don't know where we're going to be in 5 years. I mean, will we be listening to AI music? So like the artists are like not as valuable as they were before. Like, you know, like at least in business, I think that when you think about like pr the progression of AI and tools that like kind of make our work easier, I think when you actually need a human involved, it's just going to get more expensive, right? So I think a show is actually going to be should be more expensive just because there's like artists are making less and there's like supposed scarcity, you know? Like, if you want to see me live, instead of paying me $100, now you're paying me $200, you know? But you could get my like you could listen to my thing for free, you know? Or like at a very low cost. So I think experiences are probably the price is going to go up, right? Especially with automation and like AI and you know, some of the like seamlessness to go from producing a track to like having your audience listen to it.
Interesting. So you say, for example, that the reason so many musicians are moving into the consumer brand space is because that space is far more reliable than music.
I don't know about reliability is like what the point I'm trying to make with that, but I think that it's using it as a loss leader, you know? It's like, yeah, it's like you're like the music is just a taste of like who I am in terms of building my personal brand. Like, I think half the billboards I see, I hardly recognize who those people are, right? Like in like certain industries, they take no-name models and those models become famous just because they're on an ad. But like the goal of the brand wasn't to make that person famous. They just want to show whatever they had going. Like, they just wanted to show the brand that they're working on in a better way, right? So if you have a bag, like, and you just need a model to hold it, the model's there, you know, like the afterthought is the model becoming famous, right? Just because they're on like 100 of your billboards. But what you're focusing on is that like Prada, Louboutin, or, you know, whatever bag that you want to like showcase.
It's interesting.
But like if a musician took the same approach, right? If the musician is like, hey, I'm just letting you listen to this just so you can know who I am. You know, now that you know who I am, right? Like these models, like they start off as just no-name people that look good. And then they all of a sudden become like people that they're like, oh yeah, we have to have them at this party. We have to have them doing this. And then they start their own brands, you know, because they learned the economics of the whole thing.
Can go from there. And do you think, based on what you're seeing, we'll head back to, because I know that in, for example, in South Korea, for example, in the K-pop industry, they're still selling physical copies, right, and at full price. So do you see that happening in the US in the sense where do you see us returning to a physical, tangible experience, or do you feel like AI and tech is where things are heading?
No, I definitely think that like we've seen people like start using Polaroids, and we've seen people start using like even those like film cameras. Like, people are going backwards with stuff, but I don't think that's going to be like a driver, right? So I don't think that like a driver is going to be I don't think a driver is going to be like, oh, I need my like vinyl or like my CD. What I do kind of see happening, which I've had some great conversations with people about, and I would love to even get into this space, is like, you know, if you have like friends over your house and you're like playing music and like maybe like having a drink or food or whatever, You could be on your phone listening to, like, looking for music, but then people will be like, oh, look at you, you're on your phone, you know. And this happens in dinner all the time, like, right, people are on their phone. Half the time they're probably just like doom scrolling or doing some like random thing, right? But in some cases, people are actually looking for the, like, looking to enhance the experience or finding the next experience while they're currently in an experience. So, like, if you're at home and you're, like, you know, having drinks with friends, instead of being on your phone, I do see a world where, like, you would have hard copies of albums, right? Where, like, you can, like, you know, in some way, whether it's through, like, NFTs or whatever, play the music without having to go on your phone. Like, I know there's other ways, like, if you have an iPad, that might be a better, like, display so that people aren't just thinking, like, you're on social media or something. But, like, for sure that, you know, I think there's going to be different experiences like that people are, like, exploring.
It's amazing. Now, if someone wanted to enter the space you're working in, what's your dog's name again?
Dino. Or you
heard Dino. How's Dino doing?
Oh, he's fantastic. Yeah, I know, living life.
He's enjoying his life. So I was going to ask, if anyone who's tuned in wants to find out more about what you do, whether it's about yourself or how to get into that space, how should they go about doing it?
That's a good question. So I think, like, how I'm currently working, and shoot, to be honest, I may pivot out of it, like, out of, like, doing it the way that I'm doing it currently. But yeah, I think that, like, it's a very niche industry and way of, like, doing business, right?
Yeah.
So if you wanted to get into a space where you're working with, like, celebrity artists or creators to help them build brands, like, you know, you have to have relationships. So easier to go if you're, like, a consultant, right? Like, to work at, like, Bain, Accenture, like, BCG or something like this, you know? Like, that's where, like, a consultant would, like, typically, like, fall, right? If you run a creative agency, like, you know, you could, like, either work for a big advertising agency or creative agency, or you kind of start your own, which obviously, like, these days, you know, you might as well just start your own, because if you can remotely do sales, you don't necessarily need to be part of, like, a bigger company. So I would say, hey, ready, which part of the spectrum do you, like, love, you know? And then kind of jump into that. And I don't know if there's, like, a real roadmap. And if there was, you don't want to follow it, because that's the road that everyone's taking.
It's funny, my degree's in marketing. And the plan before graduation was I joined, let's say, Saatchi & Saatchi, to kind of do kind of what you're doing now. And I've done a few. So I went to a brand called Loki last year and some of their branding stuff. And it's a really interesting space. And I think we're seeing a lot more people in music heading into that space. And I think as well, because it's what I think personally, I think, unfortunately, people don't feel the music is worth the money. And so it's interesting seeing that people may not buy, let's say, a $10 CD, but they'll buy sneakers, for example. So yeah, honestly, it's a moving space.
Yeah, I mean, I don't find that, like, unreasonable.
Yeah.
Because I think if we had to think about the amount of, like, sneakers that we wore compared to the amount of songs we listened to in our lifetime, we'll find that, like, the number of songs, like, the individual units of songs we've listened to and the quantity, like, far exceeds the number of, like, shoes that we've probably bought in our life.
Right.
So like, if we just looked at, like, supply and demand, like, we would understand that the sneakers cost more.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's just, you know, from a economics perspective, I guess I would say it makes sense that, like, I wouldn't want to go buy, like, the album of every artist I've ever, like, listened to, you know? Yeah. That just wouldn't make sense to me.
Okay. Well, sweet. So, Ted, where can...
And shoes have a utility, right? They're protecting your
feet. Exactly. So actually, that's interesting. So do you think something happened culturally where we no longer see music as being a utility? Because at one point we did, in some respect, right? With on a cold,
I think they just, connect. It just got transparent. I mean, it just got fluid, right? The ability to make music and put it out there just got too easy. Right. If you treated music like, let's say, visual art in a gallery, like fine art, that might be different, right? But we know that from an economic perspective, most fine artists are broke. So, like, I don't know if, like, musicians would really want to, like, want it to be that way, right? Like, imagine if we went back and you couldn't make music as easily as you could, or you couldn't have distributed it as easily as you could, we would not have the range of artists that we have right now, right? Because the barrier of entry would be high. So it makes sense that the few that are there get paid more.
It makes sense. That's true. Sweet. Well, Ten, honestly, it's been great talking to you. Really insightful. I know you're on social media. Can you share your page info, please, for anyone who's tuned in?
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Yeah, for sure. I'm at Ted Bernard everywhere. So at TEDDBERNARD on whatever platforms I'm on and you're on. So if that's LinkedIn, Twitter, or Instagram, I should probably be working on my social media a little bit better. But, you know, watch my progress.
Ted, I'm looking forward to seeing what we're building.
David, thank you so much for having me. You're doing awesome work getting information out to folks. So thank you so much for having me.
Love, bro. Appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. God bless.
All right. Thank you.
See you.